Comedy live from my apartment. It's Rob Has a Podcast. And now here's the guy who's ready to have a down-low manse with you. I am Rob Cesternino. Hello, everybody, and welcome back live to our Big Brother 22 live recap here on Wednesday night to talk about the power of veto and Enzo winning it and not using it. So kind of a quiet night on the Big Brother, but still a lot to talk about here. It's early on. It's been 1 week since the house guest moved into the house, and we will talk about everything that's going on here with a great panel for you here tonight. Here to start things off, let's welcome in a person who is, I'm sure, fired up coming off the first stock watch of the season. Please welcome a woman who has some buyer's remorse on her draft already, the great Melissa Denny. Melissa, how are you?
I am doing great. I am so excited to be here and to talk about this episode. Strange images we got from that competition, but it was good.
Okay. All right. Well, Melissa, happy to have you here to talk about everything from tonight. Of course, a man who is always excited to talk about some Big Brother. Please welcome back the great Aman Adwin. Aman, how are you?
I'm great. BB is back, bitches. It's been a week in the Big Brother house, but the episodes have been fun, and I feel like it's very refreshing that I have been looking more forward to the edited cuts than the live feeds. But I welcome it. It's fine. Okay. I'll take it.
All right, Aman, happy to have you back here with us. And then a newcomer here from the class of 2020. Please welcome a longtime patron, recent guest on Rob and Akiva Need a Podcast. The great Grace Leader is here. Grace, how are you?
I'm good, Rob. I don't mean to put you in a bad spot, but thanks for having me on the panel. I'm very excited to talk about Big Brother 22.
Okay. All right. Happy to have you here. Of course, we'll take your questions later on the show, #RJP. We'll talk about any spoilers from the live feeds as we head into eviction night coming 1 day from now, 24 hours till our first eviction. And I have not announced this yet on the podcast proper, but let me give you a real quick.
Breaking news are happening now.
I am slated on Friday to do our first exit interview of the season. So I will have an exit interview with either Keisha or Kevin coming up on Friday morning. And then hopefully that will continue for the pre-jury. So read into that what you will, but does not sound like that we will have a buyback competition. You would not think. So that's what's going on Friday morning. We'll have an exit interview for you with the first house guest evicted from Big Brother All-Stars. So we'll see. We'll see what we have coming up tomorrow night. Of course, we'll be live after the eviction as well. Okay. Melissa, any big headlines out of the episode tonight?
Not really. I feel like we kind of knew everything going into it. I guess the one thing that was like up in the air, I guess, was how we had heard that Kevin came really close to winning that. And it was nice to see like exactly how close he was. And we also heard like rumblings of like Enzo knocking Keisha's stuff over. I didn't see
that. What the hell was that?
I have no idea. I don't even know how that would have worked.
Aman, on Sunday night, I read the whole petition that was started because it was so unfair how Enzo's stack fell down. How in the world did Enzo's fruit go flying that 20 feet in the air? Did Enzo take it on the banana and was rocking away and launched some of the fruit like when Gallagher was in the backyard?
You would have thought that Enzo had like taken the whole banana and just chucked it at everybody's stack. But, you know, and I love BB Twitter. I love the BKB community. We are a civically engaged bunch. We like to, you know, have petitions for anything and everything. So like I understand the passion. I love the passion, but we don't need a petition for everything. And there are many competitions where I'm like, you know what? They probably should be a little further apart because it seems like the vibrations of just one step could bring someone else's stuff tumbling down. But this one seemed pretty fair to me. So I'm not really sure where any of that came from.
Grace, I have a keen eye for socially distancing right now. They seem very far apart. I don't know what anybody's talking about that the fruit from Enzo came anywhere near Keisha.
Yeah, I think the next time we get a petition going, we may need to see all the video evidence beforehand. I'm not sure what anybody was thinking. How I don't even know how the story would have been being talked about inside the Big Brother house that Keisha's stack would have been knocked over as a result of Enzo. Maybe he was just rocking on the banana so hard that it knocked over everybody
maybe
near
him. We'll come back to our power veto competition. The other thing I thought was a little surprising, Amon, was that the episode really tried to make a meal out of, hey, should Ian go up on the block? Enzo is going to try to work with Cody and say, hey, maybe Ian should go on the block, yo. Maybe that's the move. Was that a real thing that was ever talked about?
I mean, Ian's name isn't the only name that came out of Enzo's mouth this week. I feel like he's sort of been in Cody's ear with a bunch of options for people to go home. I caught on to the same thing as though, because they were really showing a lot of Ian content, which I loved. And so to a casual viewer, you might be like, oh, is this like the start of some underhanded scheme? But no, Ian was never really in any danger this week, so I'm not entirely sure why they're giving Enzo this edit. But, you know, I guess anything to spice up this this week that's been trucking along.
Yeah, I think the main narrative of this episode was, number one, we want Kevin to stay. Yes. Please, yes. Let him stay. And number two, it could be Ian. That's like literally what it was. It was like even at the start of the episode, right. It was like the, you know, announcer was like saying like, but like, could it be a different target? It was like, no, but you know, okay. We'll go.
It was very overwrought. Very overwrought.
Overripe. Grace, what about poor Keisha, who could be out the door tomorrow night with a very, very, very small amount of screen time?
Also, a small amount of screen time, but also, like, they played the Dodo music underneath her conversation with Cody. Like, poor Keisha. I know she's trying. I'm sure there's tons of conversations that happen like this. Cody's also not really the one. They put the Dodo music under Cody. She doesn't need to campaign to Cody. She needs to go campaign with the rest of the house. But that's really all the content we got other than, I need to win, and I didn't win, and now I'm on the blocks again, so I need to stay. Poor Keisha didn't get much tonight.
She doesn't.
You're forgetting
much
about the little cutaway clip where she's like basically wiping her nose out. So, you know, that was a lot of screen time there for Keisha.
Honestly, I expected more because when the feeds came back after the veto ceremony, we did see Keisha in tears. We saw her, you know, be like, you know, I'm going to be fine. Like, I'm just a little shocked right now because I didn't expect it, but I kind of expected it, but I'll be fine. So I was really expecting to see more of those conversations, but they really did our sis dirty tonight. And I mean, I can't necessarily blame them because Keisha hasn't been doing a lot in the house. So, I mean, what can you got to give them something to give us. And she really hasn't been giving us a lot. So.
I mean, they could have given us some other conversation than just her being like, it smells nice in here. It must be the cologne. Like,
yeah. Here's Keisha going to talk to Cody. Here it is.
My gosh, it smells so good in here.
It smells good in here?
Yeah. Your cologne.
The music. You know that it's not going to go well when the music kicks in, because like the conversation before, it was Kevin and it was like serious, like, okay, like I can work with you, like I'm just going to do what it takes. And then all of a sudden Keisha comes in and it's like, dunk, 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 dunk. It's like, oh my God. Now you already know it's going to go in a bad direction.
Poor Keisha.
I think so many of us are just trying to like, you know, reconcile with the fact that the last time that we saw Keisha, it was during BB10, one of the best seasons ever. Like, you always think about Keisha's birthday. Even Keisha references her own birthday in the house. And you compare that to what we're getting now. And of course, like, not everybody stays the same. We all get a little older. We all, you know, change in our lives. But in the context of Big Brother, I think a lot of fans were just expecting Keisha to just be a bit more of a firecracker and have a little bit more gas in her engine, but it just seems like she's been sputtering the whole time. And I think that's really hard for a lot of us to reconcile.
Okay. Yeah, not looking so great for Keisha right now. Let's go through the show tonight and pick up on some of the things that we got to see. We pick things up with after the nominations. And really, Grace, from the start of the episode, this was Kevin's storyline that he feels like that. Did he make a mistake?
I don't know what mistake he made other than just not... You know, he did kind of go to Cody. I don't know if he's sort of playing this like little puppy dog type. Like, I don't think he's playing it. I think that's sort of how he's feeling. That's what's happening to him. But it just doesn't seem to be working with anybody. No, like he made this sort of impassioned plea. Cody went back and said, I feel so bad about this. And it just didn't work. So he's on the block. He kind of tried the same thing again, this whole everything with Enzo. And, you know, maybe I used to be a summer camp director. That's what my previous job was. And I feel like Big Brother is a lot like summer camp. There's a lot of similarities. You get put in one place for the whole summer. People kind of start to lose their minds. People wearing silly costumes, that sort of stuff. Kevin, to me, is kind of the kid who doesn't really have any friends. I noticed that when he was picking players for the video, he said, Enzo, do you want to play with me? Do you want to play? And that's sort of what I'm feeling from Kevin. He's just feeling a little bit lost. He doesn't have anybody he can really turn to. We saw that in the bathroom, too. I'm not sure what he can sort of do unless he sort of turns up the energy, maybe. I feel like playing sort of the poor me thing I don't think is really working.
Yeah, it doesn't make anybody want to work with him. Like if somebody's just like, I don't really have anything to offer you, like I'm kind of desperate, so like please like work with me, take me, like it's not gonna convince someone to work with you. Like I get that he does feel that way, but there's got to be something more to it that he can offer to them as like, look, I will be a loyal ally, like, you know, whatever he has to say, but not in the way that's like, please, like that just comes across as like, okay, this guy can't really do anything for me. What am I getting out of this? I'm just helping him.
Aman, but I can't help but feel that if you're rewatching this season, Kevin is the person that goes up on the block week one and then ends up sort of like starting off, and then it's the history of Big Brother. There's always somebody who's like on the block week one, and then they're getting ready to go for the long haul. Kevin's that person. He's in that spot.
Yeah, I mean, he definitely could be that person. We do see that person that kind of like gets put on the block first, and it's like they get like a little immunized shot, you know what I mean? And they're like good for like a couple of weeks, they're good, you know what I mean? And that, I feel like, you know, maybe getting house guest choice and then choosing Enzo for the veto, and then maybe not necessarily that panning out the way that he wants, maybe that is a good thing. Maybe it does show everybody, because everybody kept saying about Kevin in their DR, he has nobody, he's got nobody, and I wouldn't pick him up. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So I feel like this might actually be a really good thing for him, as painful as it was to watch him campaign. And I feel like he has to get out of his head. Like, he's focused so much on like, these people are legends, they're such great players. I'm like, Kevin, do you understand that you made it to third place in Big Brother 11? You're also a legend. Like, do not allow yourself to get stricken, whatever the word is, by these people. Like, you deserve your spot as well.
Grace, I'm really a little surprised with that from Kevin, because I kind of feel like that for Kevin to come back to Big Brother, like I kind of feel like his attitude was, hey, do you know who I am? Like these people have no idea what they're in for. And I feel like that Kevin is almost like that he's stuck with like imposter syndrome of like, hey, maybe I don't belong here. Like I'm screwing up. I'm not doing good. I'm letting everybody down. As opposed to like he's ready to really show people that they were sleeping on Kevin Campbell.
Yeah, I mean, you talk about imposter syndrome. He showed his drag persona in the intro package. It's I need a veto, but you know, couldn't quite pull it out. But yeah, I think that that's right. And you know, it might actually be working. He said at the end of the episode that Enzo and Cody maybe kind of feel like they can pull him along, drag him along. And maybe that's all he needs. I know that he sort of talked about maybe, you know, if he stays in the house, he might want to, you know, he might side with that side. And that's a little disappointing. You know, there's sort of the Case or Janelle side over there that you think, oh, that would be great if Kevin aligned with them. But the smart move is really, if most of the power is revolving around Cody and Enzo and Nicole, to sort of, you know, slide his way in there, and then let's see what happens the rest of the way.
Okay, Melissa, we're going to see where Kevin is going to pitch to Cody a down-low-mance.
This could be the beginning of a down-low-mance.
Yeah, a down-low-mance. Is this a first in Big Brother terminology? Have we had a down-low-mance before?
I don't feel like I've heard that term before, but maybe I have. I don't like
Cody
it.
Cody seemed very on board for the down low.
He did seem very on board. I just feel like it's like, what makes this a manse? Like, where is the manse part of this? I don't know. Isn't this just working together? Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Yeah. I like it.
Yeah, I mean, the term down low, or DL for short, has a certain meaning mm-hmm. in the gay community. So it was kind of interesting that he went with that phrasing. It kind of made it really, really funny to hear Cody be like, oh, yeah, I'm totally down for
that. I'm into that.
Like, yes, please.
I'm so into it, baby.
Yeah.
See, I feel like Cody probably envisions a down low manse as being, he doesn't have to do any work. He doesn't have to put in any effort. We'll be in alliance. We'll never talk about it ever again. And then we're good, right?
I mean, it's a pretty, pretty nice offer. I take it too.
Meanwhile, we're going to see Keisha's flailing attempt to go and win Cody over does not go as well. We'll see the Kacer and Janelle side of this a little bit also. Janelle and Kacer sort of seem like that they're a little bit like, boy, we'd love to save Keisha, but what can we do here? Janelle says, I'm in a star costume.
You can't campaign in a star costume.
Yeah.
What's in the line? It's, we just got to lay low. And they both went, how? How are we supposed to lay low?
How are we going
to
lay low?
Kacer and Janelle.
We're Kacer and Janelle. How are we going to do this?
It's just so crappy because Keisha's like sort of like making them look bad because she is not, she's barely doing it herself. So you have these people like, you have the Janelle twinkling around the house for you, but what are you doing? Yeah. You know what I mean?
So yeah. I like when we have the ability to sort of like, shade in a little bit more for the listeners. I don't mean by being shady, but I mean, give some more backstory for the people who are not watching the live feeds, but just watching the TV show. Melissa, mm-hmm. Has Keisha's campaign been this uncaffeinated as we've seen on the show?
I don't want to say yes, but I feel like I kind of have to. I have not been impressed with her campaigning so far. I thought maybe like this was just the beginning where she was trying to just not like make waves. If she thought maybe there was a chance she would stay, but she's hearing rumblings now. And she's even talking to Janelle and Kacer being like, I think I'm the one who's going. And yet she's still not kicking it into high gear and like figuring out, okay, what can I do to stay? Yeah, I mean, I've been really disappointed in her campaigning. I think at least, not that Kevin's doing so amazing or anything like that, but he really doesn't have to at this point. The people already want to keep him. He already has some people who feel like they want to work with him and who like him as a person. And so it's just an easy, yeah, let's keep Kevin. And Keisha's not doing anything to prevent that.
Amon, do you think that she is like saying, I'm going to do nothing because then they'll keep me? Because a lot of times when mm-hmm. the more somebody like, you got the fish on the hook, the more they fight it, it's like, oh, you got to get them out of there. Look how dangerous they are. But by playing dead almost, is she improving her chance to stay?
I mean, the game has changed a lot since BB10. I mean, BB10 was back to basics. You know what I mean? That was supposed to be BB in its rawest form. And it's been 12 episodes later, over a decade later, and the game has a bunch of strategies that you can employ. And I feel like right now the strategy is to work the fluidity of the first week to your advantage. Mm-hmm. Of course, there's going to be a lot of vote waffling and going back and forth. Use that to your advantage. Plant little seeds of doubt. Promise things to people. You know what I mean? Because the vote was up in the air for a certain point, but she did sort of play dead because I think to a lot of older school players, it's like, oh, well, let me not make any waves because then they'll, you know, I'll drop off the radar. That person will eventually do something to mess themselves up. But meanwhile, Kevin is also playing a little bit more of a scared game, but he's more vocal when it comes to talking to everybody else. So she really just missed out on the window to do anything. And I don't even know. It's going to take a miracle for her to be saved at this point tomorrow because, girl,
you know, talking about making promises that you can't keep, like the thing that kind of reeled Cody into thinking maybe I can work with Kevin is Kevin said, if I win HOH, you're not going up. And if I win the safety suite, I'll pick you. But there's no, this like the odds of him winning either of those are so low. And yet it's still the thing that Cody was like, that's very interesting. And why don't I just keep Kevin, right? So those are the type of things I think Keisha needs to be going around saying. Maybe people don't necessarily buy that she could win those competitions, but who knows?
I also think like the dead fish strategy works only in situations where the other person on the block is volatile or like mm-hmm. they have the potential to blow something up or to make a bad move or to be kind of crazy. Right. And then it's like, okay, do we keep this crazy person or do we keep this person who's not really doing anything? And I think that's the issue is that in this case, neither of them are crazy and neither of them are going to do something to blow everything up. So like, you want to keep the person who will help your game. And if one person's telling you that they want to work with you and that they will, won't put you on the block and that they'll return the favor as Kevin keeps telling everybody, like Keisha's not doing any of that. So why would I vote for somebody who's not promising me anything and who even has the potential to like obviously join up with Janelle and Kacer and possibly work against you? So it doesn't make any sense.
Let me ask the question from the other side of it. Grace, do you feel like that Kevin has mounted a good campaign this week?
No, I think as Melissa said, they're both sort of having the same campaign. It's just that Kevin's he's promising a little bit more. But I don't think that his campaign is necessarily strong. I think it's right that it's not a terrible campaign, but it's just if the other person is doing the exact same thing, then you're sort of just leaving it up to everybody else because neither of them are either kind of giving agency to their campaign.
Melissa, but I feel like that the Kevin campaign is almost the perfect one for this house where the game is tight, where I feel like that if he really was kind of a little bit more aggressive and really trying to fight to stay, I think that maybe people might wake up and say, oh, hey, Keisha's not doing anything. Why don't we keep her around? Because Kevin is really trying to wheel and deal. That him sort of doing like finding like that middle ground of like not doing nothing, but not also doing too much, I think is making people feel very comfortable with him.
Yeah, definitely. I think people do feel comfortable with him. What I am concerned about, like, I'm not really necessarily concerned about his campaigning to stay this week. I'm concerned about him fitting in if he stays this week. Like, I'm concerned about like his position moving forward. Like, I feel like he's trying to secure himself staying for this week. But after that, like, where does he go? I mean, if people think that he's this like sad puppy dog, like, they're not necessarily going to think of him as a strong ally that they should really work with. I mean, he's going to end up in the same place as he started the week off in, and that's not great.
You got to make sure that you're not the block star because you could get that easily. But a lot of people go from this first week nominee to HOH. That could be that's a realistic possibility. This house is very tight, Amon. I could see a lot of people throwing the HOH tomorrow.
I mean, they really shouldn't, for one, because there are obvious targets in the house that will definitely put a lot of different kinds of people up. So, and number two, I just want to see people go for the HOH. But I think that Kevin really should look towards, you know, winning this because you don't want to be that repeat nominee. I think one of the strongest things about his campaign in comparison to Keisha's was that he was the last nominee to talk to Cody before the nomination ceremony. And then he was the first nominee to talk to Cody after the nomination ceremony. And I feel like getting in Cody's head and like convincing Cody, like, yeah, you know what? You'll put my ass on the block, but there's a way for us to work after this. And I feel like if he does win HOH, here's a chance for you to actually have some power this time in maybe getting your claws into something with Cody, because Cody seems to be the nexus of like all of the alliances this week. And if you can get in good with him going into week two, that should set you up like better, like to what Melissa was saying. Like, you don't want to end up being in the exact, you want the net value of your game to go up going into next week. You don't want it to go down or stay the same.
Grace, I don't get to see a ton on the live feeds, but does Cody ever leave the HOH room?
I think sometimes he ventures out. I think that's his sort of home base though. He might, he'll be a bit in uncomfortable territory maybe next week.
Okay, we'll see if he has to leave the room.
The reason he stays in there, it smells so good.
That's why.
So, why would you leave?
Wants to make sure when everybody comes in there, that's the first thing they notice. Okay. What a great scene with Kacer and Davon tonight. And when we did the Kacer preview, we talked about how, you know, that they really treated it very seriously. seriously when Kacer came into the house way back when. I guess that was 2005 when he played for the first time, and what it meant for him to be an Iraqi or a person from hailing from. His family is from Iraq, and coming back and then playing now and talking about, you know, hey, why don't we do some good here in terms of like this platform, talking with Devon. That was such a great scene, and not something we normally get on Big Brother proper.
I mean, imagine that, right? Like having access to the eyes and brains and ears of millions of people and then doing something with that. I mean, the funny thing is that, you know, going, because I was to prepare for All Stars, I went back and watched a lot of the rumored house guests first, second, third season, whatever. And they used to dive deep into these kinds of conversations and situations. And now all of a sudden, like towards like the teens of the Big Brother seasons and certainly into the 20s, they have stopped completely. So I guess with everything that's going on in the world now, it's like more acceptable again. Like it's trendy now to be able to like actually air these conversations. I'm glad that they're occurring. I wish that they would have happened sooner, but I'm certainly not going to turn my nose up at it now. I think that, you know, this conversation with Kacer and Devon and Anthony, and of course later on with Ian, is very well needed, because I mean, not only does it just, you know, have these conversations take place on a national platform, but it increases your audience's investment in the game. You know what I mean? Like you hear Ian's story, you hear Kacer's story, you want to root for them. It just makes you a little bit more, you know, interested in the game as a whole. So
Yeah, definitely. I mean, like a lot of people online were like, oh, I'm sure CBS isn't going to air any of this. Like when it first happened on the live feeds. And I was like, really? I think they're going to air all of this and be like so happy that they're finally going to get some like good conversation coming out of this and not like some TMZ article, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. We got to see a Tyler segment. We hadn't seen a ton of Tyler in this season, and we see Tyler. The alliances are falling into his lap one after one. We have a montage of Tyler with Nicole, Devon, Kacer, Christmas, David, Memphis, Janelle, Grace, so many deals for Tyler.
So many deals, making deals. I think it's really interesting that would happen to him. He self-confessed that he did not want to play this hard, and
this
it just sort of happened.
Not what I wanted coming back for this season. Deals.
I think that's pretty common. I think it's going to be an interesting theme throughout the season, whether, you know, when people, you know, this is only the second time we've had a full cast of returnee Big Brother players. And so it'll be interesting to see, you know, Ian in the pregame talked about, I'm not going to play the same way I played before. And then he's like, I'm in the veto competition. I'm definitely going for it. And I'm definitely going to try to win. Right. Like, and so he talked about wanting to play differently. Tyler's the same thing. He said, I didn't want to come in this. I didn't want to do the same thing, like all these final two deals and have it come back to bite me, which I'm not actually sure that's what came back to bite him. But it's just interesting that seems like he kind of fell into playing this exact same game as he did last time.
I was so happy to see this Tyler segment because I just felt like I didn't know how he actually felt about the fact that he was playing the same game again. Like I was like, is he ever going to address this? Because he wasn't saying anything and he was kind of just like, okay, final two, final two, final two. And that, yes, that is actually how it happened on the feeds, was like people were coming in one after another, like into this one room or even multiple rooms, whatever, like just constantly he was having these conversations where the person would be like, okay, you and me, I feel really good about you. And I was like, really, Tyler, you said going in, you weren't going to play this way. And so I'm so happy we finally got like a DR kind of with him admitting like, guess this is the way it's going again.
Okay. Amon, could you contrast this to Big Brother 20 Tyler? That was this happening where the deals that Tyler got into, what was it, people coming to Tyler, or was he more aggressively pursuing these deals with people in Big Brother 20?
He was definitely a little bit more pursuant in BB20. I've been seeing a lot of people online say, you know what, Tyler, I like him this season. What's going on? And I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that, especially during tonight's edit, I think it was kind of nice to see him sort of be a little overwhelmed by all of the final twos that he was, having to like sort of like juggle, because I think that that's an edit that we didn't really get last season, because he was a little bit more in the driver's seat. And not to say that he doesn't have any agency now. I just think that obviously he did not want to come into the game doing the exact same thing. And he scared himself into not making so many commitments that he scared himself into making commitments because he's not making commitments. So I'm really interested to see how he decides to handle some of these. I remember like on his Instagram earlier this week, Angela's running his stuff, I assume. And one of the questions that she put on the Instagram was like, oh, how many final twos does Tyler have right now? And I guess it was supposed to be a trick question because she was like, oh, he never said final two in any of those conversations. And I'm like, well, that's kind of contrasting
boy,
from what
come
he
on.
Said in tonight's episode. So
get out of here with a lot of these trick questions on Instagram.
I think come all on. Of these, like now, some of them might be a little bit higher in the hierarchy than others, but these are relationships that I think that he is fully interested in capitalizing on later in the game. So I'm going to be interested to see how he does that.
Okay.
It's not a final two. I just said I'd ride or die for you.
That's yeah. That's
right. I was like, okay. Okay, girl.
Doesn't count. I didn't say final two. Okay. All right. I just want to take a quick break away from the action to thank our sponsor for this episode of the podcast. Those are our friends over at ZipRecruiter. Look, if you're an employer, you've got a lot on your plate, especially right now, but ZipRecruiter can make your hiring process quick and painless. Look at Cafe Altura's COO, Dylan Mishkowitz. He agrees he needed a director of coffee for his organic coffee company, but he was having trouble finding qualified applicants. So he switched to ZipRecruiter.com/survive. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Imagine if Kevin was able to use ZipRecruiter. He'd be able to find people that would be jumping at the chance to play for the veto for him. Its technology identifies people with the right experience and invites them to apply to your job so you get qualified candidates fast. Dylan posted his job on ZipRecruiter and said he was impressed by how quickly he had great candidates apply. He also used ZipRecruiter's candidate rating feature to filter his applicants so he could focus on the most relevant ones. And that's how Dylan found his new director of coffee in just a few days. With results like that, it's no wonder that 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site within the first day. See why ZipRecruiter is effective for businesses of all sizes. Try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/survive. That's ZipRecruiter.com/survive. Survive. ZipRecruiter.com/survive. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And now, let's get back to talking about Wednesday night's Big Brother. Let's talk about a different potential final two, Melissa. Enzo and Cody, they're going to work together, just two guys from Jersey, and they've got an alliance, and they're calling it...
We should call ourselves The Root.
The Root?
I still don't know whether it's like R-O-O-T or R-O-U-T.
Yeah, like, oh, hey, we're driving
like,
down
the... Like, is it The Root the, together, you know, the, or is it like The Root of the Alliance?
Oh.
Like, I couldn't tell because they kept doing different hand gestures, like, we're The Root. And so I was like, oh, it's like a tree. And then they're like, yeah, we're The Root to the end. It's like, wait, so you're driving? That okay. I don't...
Grace, what is it? Okay. Is it Root or Root? Or is it like Square Root?
I thought it was like square or like tree roots, like they were embedded in the house. But I think The Root, that actually is a better, I think.
Well, I thought it was tree root too. And then he's like, it's The Root to the end. But it's like the root to the end implies that you're like going there. I don't know.
Or is it like
I'm
a foul taste situation where it's like 5 of us to the end, like root to the end? You know
oh,
what
so
I mean?
Oh, so it's an acronym for something?
The R-O-O-T to the end.
They couldn't have just been the Jersey Boys. That would have been so much easier.
Yeah. Okay.
I think that both are fine. I think that the like tree root probably works better because the two of them are like in the middle of two brigades right now. So in a lot of ways, they are sort of like the root of everything in terms of alliance structure this week. So I think The Root is probably a little bit more apropos. But y'all do you. Okay. Y'all do you.
All right. The Root. All right. We got the segment. I was surprised that we saw this, Grace, about Ian talking about they opened up the backyard and there's the hammock. But Ian doesn't want to go in the hammock because it was squeaking too much. And we heard a lot about this on the different live feed updates with Taryn. But there was a conversation about how there was Ian. There was the squeaky hammock. People didn't like it on the live feeds. People talked about it, and that there was a lot of people wondering about is Ian on the spectrum? And it turns out that he is. But he didn't want to, you know, have that be a thing about him this season. But yeah, we get the scene in the episode.
I mean, it's so tricky. Anytime, you know, Kacer as well in his segment, representation is so important, but it is so hard to be the person, the first person to come out and be the person who is the representation of that thing. You know, Zeke has talked a lot about that in Survivor. He did not want to be the trans representation of Survivor players, and he got put in that situation. And as a result, it's become a really great thing. He's publicly said it's really great that people can look to me and look up to me and see that, you know, for me, as a trans person myself, to see someone who's played Survivor, that's amazing. And so I'm sure that for people who are also on the spectrum, to see someone who not only played an amazing game of Big Brother, but won a game of Big Brother, that's a social strategy game that I think a lot of people would say someone who has autism would not be able to be successful, and just totally blow that out of the water. And I think it's also great sort of that he did it, and nobody really knew. And now he's come back and said, yeah, I did it. I was fortunate that it was sort of outed in a moment in the episode where he says people would like make fun of me or critique me about being on the hammock. That's terrible and awful. Personally, I was really glad to see it. It just shows you how important representation is.
Yeah. Melissa, I've known Ian for 8 years. I had no idea that that this was something about him.
I had no idea either. I didn't watch the live feeds for Big Brother 14, so like I don't know if he revealed this back then as well, and it just didn't make the show. Like I don't think so, because I feel like that might have been talked about more if he had revealed it, but. Mm-hmm. Don't quote me on it, because I don't know. But I do think it's interesting that like now this is something that we are finding out, and it kind of makes you think more about Big Brother 14 and maybe how for Ian, like that was such a huge deal to like Grace said, to do this sort of social game mm-hmm. in a situation where maybe you don't feel as comfortable in a social game. So I, you know, good for him.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm just glad that people are like can be a little bit more empathetic to the situation. You know what I mean? Because I mean, yeah, I mean, the both of you just said that you didn't even know, but I guess that's the entire point. It's like sometimes you just don't know, you know. And here he is, like out here winning Big Brother 14, and like, are people really getting on his ass that much over a squeaky hammock? That's not his fault. Ask for some damn oil from production.
The hammock's
fault.
Like,
yeah, yeah. Crazy. I think it was a sort of a live feed thing of he'd sit in the hammock for too long and people would say for people who don't watch live feeds, sometimes there's a lot of whispering that goes on a live feed. Sometimes you got to turn that speaker all the way up so loud sometimes so you could hear it. And then you cut to a squeaky hammock. That could blow your eardrums out. You know. So
speaking so loud that they couldn't hear the whispering. That's like the big critique. It's like we've missed out on so much game talk because Ian and that damn hammock.
Yeah.
Oh, get over it.
Okay.
Get over it.
All right. So let's talk a little bit about Kevin's campaigning. We have a funny scene where he's trying to talk to Enzo. Grace, Kevin is sort of like just setting up shop like outside the bathroom where I guess the people are like waiting on the bathroom line and Kevin's just going to try to hit everybody as they come through.
Yeah, I was going to do the podcast from my bathroom, but I realized Kevin's strategy of, you know, putting up shop in the bathroom, just waiting for people. It was not the ideal situation, trying to start conversation. Then Enzo just a minute, I'm just going to go to the bathroom. And yeah, just repeatedly, he just couldn't like get it. He must be nervous. Again, we talked about him being a little bit starstruck. I don't know if that's what it is, but sort of the hesitation. And I just need to ask you a question.
Yeah.
I don't want to put you in a bad spot.
Yeah. So Enzo goes in the bathroom. Here comes David. And then Kevin's like, David, I need to ask you a question. And David was like a deer in the headlights. That like, did David even respond to any of Kevin's questions? It's like me talking to my children most of the time, where it's like, are you even listening to me?
They just kept being like, I'm going to go back to sleep. I think they were all just like not even awake at that point, because they're just like, yeah, I guess you're in a tough spot. Okay, good night. Like, they literally just like couldn't have a conversation. Yeah. I felt bad for Kevin, but at the same time, I'm like, is now really the time? Like, is right now really the time when you should be doing this? I feel like there's got to be another way, another place. Like, this is not it.
Aman, I felt like that you really have gotten through Kevin's story so far this season of what it is like to be on the block for the first week, because we see, like, you know, Kevin, he was nervous, he goes up on the block, and now nobody's, it's like people do not even want to give him the time of day. Like, he's just like talking to people and they're just like, I got a thing, I gotta go do something, and they just walk away from him.
Yeah, I mean, David is probably a really tough cookie to crack. I mean, I feel like he doesn't even really know the show that he's quite on yet. Because, I mean, if I'm a fan of the show and I'm somebody that wants to play Big Brother and somebody on the block is trying to talk to me about like, oh, like I want to make a deal with you or something. The fan in me is going to like at least hear them out. But he's like, okay, so yeah, like I'll go to bed out tomorrow. Like, no, like talk to him now. But yeah, Kevin's like in a really, really weird situation, because I mean everybody is so gun shy that you don't want to be seen making deals with the person on the block yet, so it's just a really, really messy situation for him.
Melissa, that I have a David theory, and I'm not sure if people have talked about this, but that just that David's lack of like talking game with people so far in this season, where he just seems like very apprehensive to do any sort of talking about the game. You know, David's entire experience last season was he went out in that challenge. He comes back in Camp Comeback, and then the people in running the house in that early stage of the game was like, hey, Camp Comeback people, no game talk. This is not your game. Stay out of this. This is just our game talk. If we don't want any of you guys talking game the whole time. And that was David's only experience. And it's like he grew up in this town where you weren't allowed to dance. And now,
oh my God, why did I see that coming?
I'm not supposed to talk about game. I'll get in trouble.
Yeah, and he doesn't know how.
I don't know how. So nobody ever taught me.
I don't know how to dance. I don't know how to talk game.
The person running David's Twitter right now is talking more game than David is. That's a shame.
That is true. I'm hoping he's just waiting to kick it into gear, and he thinks like, okay, like it's totally possible that like people on the outside who were like giving him advice before going in were like, okay, first part of the game, you lay low. You don't like make a target of yourself. You don't want to be one of the first people to go home. Like, just make sure you lay low. And he's kind of taking that to like the next level, which is like not only lay low, but just like lay so low that like you don't talk with anyone about the game. You don't make any alliances. Like, you do nothing. You basically blend into the background, and then you can kind of scoot on to the next part of the game.
But listen to me, David. Somebody tries to talk game with you, you run the other way. Do not answer them. Get out of there.
Just don't do it, David.
I feel like on this podcast, I feel like there has been that advice of you just go to sleep for the first half of the game. Just go to sleep. No, it's not fun to watch. It's not entertaining. We all don't forget it. Be awake the whole time.
Okay.
Don't go back to bed after you've woken up and Kevin tries to talk game with you. Stay awake.
All right. We go to our veto draw. Cody picks Tyler. Kevin is going to pick it Haskell's choice. He does pick Enzo. Keisha gets Ian, and we get our great Peloton competition. First Big Brother real competition of the summer. We could not wait for Big Brother to come back so we could get house guests straddling and rocking giant bananas in the 8 p.m. hour on CBS. They couldn't help themselves. They could not wait to get come back. That the guys we've been working all summer on Big Brother. Can't wait for you to see what we've been working on.
Ride
the giant banana.
Ride a banana.
Yes. Okay. Luckily for a lot of the viewers, none of the bananas appeared to be squeaky bananas that would rock. So nobody had to complain about anything.
Squeaky banana hammocks.
No squeaky bananas. The contestants themselves knew, like, the guys, what are you doing? This is like, really?
I think my dream job is to just work in the department where they come up with the ideas for the challenges. Like, someone was just sitting there going, Peloton. It's a banana. They ride a banana. They have great. Like that's the job I want.
Grace, do you think that's how it works? There's like a writer's room, and they're like, "Okay, what's hot? What's hot right now? People are riding Peloton. Okay. Yeah. Go. Let's go with that." Can we predict the other challenges? Are there any other 2020 trends that are not particularly upsetting too morbid that they could be worked into? Could there be a TikTok challenge coming up?
I was just about to say, TikTok. They have to ride on a giant clock.
Yeah, okay, TikTok. What can we do? What can we do with TikTok? Okay.
They have to copy a dance.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, definitely. I think you called it, Rob. I think at the end of this season, during the final HOH, where they have to answer all of those questions about the jurors, I mean, they did it for like podcast last time. I feel like they're going to do it this time, but it'll be TikTok themed.
So no, you know what it's going to be? I'm going to call it right now. There's going to be a Zoom challenge. There's going to be something on Zoom. You're on some sort of a Zoom call. I don't know how exactly it's going to work. Somebody might Zoom bomb in. I don't know exactly. Maybe the Zingbot is going to be on Zoom. I don't know.
That'll be the mid-season twist. The first person to buffer is like out.
Am I on mute? Yeah.
Yeah. You have to prevent all the distractions, like kids coming in or like, you know, sounds from outside, dog barking.
Okay. All right. Enzo, I think, probably had the best line talking about his experience in the competition.
It's my first time straddling a giant banana. I guess it's fun in a weird way.
Okay. Then Enzo got the slow motion treatment, and they got what they wanted from Enzo. Enzo gave it to them.
So thirsty online. Oh my God. Like, I know that y'all have been in quarantine, but golly.
Yeah.
Oh boy. Yeah, I'd be hesitant to participate in one of these vetoes because I'd be like, I know this is going to be a GIF somewhere. Like, this is going to be all over the place.
Yeah. Do you think that they try to say, like, oh, well, this will be a GIF? This will be shared on social? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely. I'm surprised they weren't, because the Big Brother Twitter account has been on it tonight. I mean, I was surprised that those weren't like gifts like galore just being tweeted out tonight. But yeah, they're definitely going for as much footage as possible.
Why? What were they doing?
They were just, you know, really, they were sort of like live tweeting more than they ever have before and like acknowledging all of the special segments with like Acer and Ian and Bailey and Davon and just all sorts of stuff. Like they were on it this tonight. Okay. Good for them.
All right. But no mention of the giant bananas.
I don't think so. I mean, I could have missed it. They could have.
Yes.
I don't know if you'd miss a giant banana.
Yes. Grace, would this have been a good opportunity to have Casey from Big Brother? Was it Big Brother 11 who went out in the giant banana costume to come back for this competition have him on Zoom?
Yeah, that would have been just how. Yeah, they should just do all the guest hosts of all the competitions. They could just be on Zoom this year.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Okay. All right. Ultimately, we saw a bunch of players time out that they did the thing Amon, where normally we get like, "Hey, I was doing so good in this competition," and then like an explosion. This time, everybody running out of time into the ground.
They love that.
It's their favorite.
I think it's because they were so close. Like, mm-hmm. Oh my God, if Kevin had not, if he had just been just 1 second quicker, he would have won that competition. And I didn't, because they were talking on the feeds after the competition about, you know, how close it was and like the scores and everything. But I didn't really understand until we got to watch it tonight. And damn, like that's really got a bite. So like within a 1 second. Mm-hmm. Like away from safety.
Also, okay. It's got to feel so bad if you're Kevin and you are the one who picked Enzo and then he doesn't mm-hmm. use it on you. It's like, mm-hmm. for real, like, I mean, he's probably thinking back and thinking like, I should have just picked someone who I knew wouldn't win. Mm-hmm. Like,
well,
he's probably...
In fairness, that has been Enzo's reputation, but let's see, he came back this season and said he was going to be the comp beast this season.
Yeah, he got fit.
Do people know that like Enzo and Cody are relatively close? Because that's the other thing that to me didn't make much sense in picking Enzo, in that if he didn't really feel like Cody, he pleaded to him, it didn't work. And then you pick someone who's pretty close to Cody, who then, you know, as soon as the veto after Enzo had won, he said, well, I gotta go check with Cody. So, you know, the decision had to be run through Cody before it would actually be made. Mm-hmm. So
Yeah.
Okay. I'm surprised he didn't pick Davon, because they seem to be really, because I mean, they hit it off as soon as they saw each other in the house. So I was sort of shocked by that.
And it feels like, I mean, Kevin and Nicole have been, or Nicole A have been having like good conversations. Like there are a lot of people other than Enzo who I would have thought Kevin would have and should have picked. But like, I thought, okay, well, Enzo must have given him like a lot of reassurance that he was going to use it. But like, I thought maybe I had missed something when I was watching the feeds, but I didn't miss anything. Like, there was really no reassurance there. And like, if that's all they can show us in the episode is him basically being like, I get it.
Yeah, you make me laugh, yo.
Yeah, you make me laugh.
Yeah, like when he chose him during the veto ceremony, he was like, it was so tentative. It was like, like, Enzo, would you mind? Like, will you please play for me? Like, I was like, what is this?
I'll see what I can do, yo.
Okay. Not good.
Enzo does have a big celebration after winning.
Let's go. Papa got the bling bling. I did this one for my kids. The meow meows arrived. Let's go.
Boy, what is the ripping off KC, Grace? That he's basically trying to come in and steal KC's signature catchphrase?
Papa got the bling bling.
Yes.
And let's go.
Yeah.
Let's go.
He did this one for his kids. Kids, I rode the giant banana for you, yo.
Yeah, I'm just glad that he did all of those pull-ups and stuff that we saw in his intro package in preparation for straddling a giant banana. Good for him.
I have to say, I was a little bit confused about the mechanic of riding the banana, because I saw at one point Tyler hopped on, he went once, and his time reset. But then I saw there was a 3-second thing where Keisha was like riding the banana. So I'm not quite sure what the mechanism there was. It sounded like normally, you know, you have to be on it for a certain amount of time and your time goes up. It seems like it was a little bit wonky.
I think
maybe we need a petition.
I think it was like intervals. So like if you, depending on how many like straddle movements you made, your time would like get reset in like 5-second intervals. So when Tyler hopped off, he was already like high up there, just went back. And it is reset.
So what I don't understand, normally when we see this competition, it's sort of like the like bowl arena thing where it's like, okay, spin around in a circle 20 times, but do 20 banana thrusts really like throw off your equilibrium to the point where then you can't stack fruit? I really was unclear about why the banana part needed to happen, to why that would be so difficult to stack up the fruit.
It's optics, yeah. Rob.
I don't know. Okay. I'm not a game
designer. They want the banana. They want the GIF. Yeah. It's all for the image.
Okay. All right. So afterwards, we get a little bit of Ian and Franzel talking. Ian tells us this tonight.
Nicole is definitely the person that I trust the most in this game.
Ian. I don't know if that's great. That's not great, that's right, not Melissa? Good.
I mean, I feel like I saw this coming because he does talk to her and they have their millions club or whatever. But I thought, I guess I held out hope for the fact that maybe there'd be like a diary room where he kind of says like, look, like I'm keeping my friends close, my enemies closer sort of thing. Like, you know, I'm going to keep Frenzel here with me, but you know, I don't trust her because I know what she does and I know her gameplay or whatever. But it's like, oh, Ian, not good.
Yeah.
She is not for him.
Is it bad though? I'm not sure it's bad because Frenzel's number one seems to be, it's Cody, right? It's very obvious that it's Cody. But she did say it's good to have a backup plan. Cody has put himself as arguably one of the biggest targets in the house. So at some point, he is going to go. And then Franzel does need a new number one. And that can be Ian. And not like Nicole Franzel, I think, has a good shot. You know, if they did get to the end together, which that's a long way down the road, I don't think Franzel's going to be racking up the jury votes against Ian. So I don't think it's a terrible strategy by Ian to put himself with Franzel.
Amon, I was waiting for the show to really lean into the Nicole versus Janelle edit, and I thought we were going to get a big dose of that tonight, because in the opening moments of the show, Nicole says this about Janelle in saying that she wishes that Cody could have put Janelle and Kaser on the block.
I don't trust Janelle as far as I can throw her, and I can't even pick her up.
Yeah, why should you just say I can't pick her up?
Rude.
Yeah.
I'm just kidding. I thought it was kind of funny. Stars I liked it. I do tend to like Nicole Franzel's DRs, I have to say. Like, you know, maybe that's a controversial opinion, but I always feel like she's funny.
Yeah.
I just feel like she's really coming into her own as the villain that you love to hate.
I feel like that's what I want.
Yeah, like BB18, like people weren't expecting that from her because she was on BBC. She's like, oh my God, I love Hayden. I'm from Ugly Michigan. Oh my God. And now she has become this, this person that has a mission and a vendetta to prove to everybody, like, no, Paul was not robbed. So I think that she's really trying to lay into that. And Janelle is a legend. You know what I mean? There was like a small spoiler alert. They were talking a bit on the feeds today about how, like, she was upset with Janelle because Janelle apparently talked so much about how she didn't deserve her win in BB18 and Paul was, you know, totally deserved to beat her and everything. So she is just not, if that is her mission statement this season to prove that she was not robbed, then Janelle is the first bullet point on that.
Did you talk about this? That Nicole Franzel, I saw this clip today that Nicole Franzel made it sound like she has a literal binder of things that people say about her. She prints that out. She prints out tweets and she puts that in her book. She gets out a glue stick then puts it in the binder. So she will always remember. Can you print out podcasts, Melissa?
I'm sure you could find a way. The transcript.
Yeah. Turn off that YouTube transcription.
I mean, she said, she was like, look, like, I avoided getting into arguments online. I just let it all happen. I wanted anybody to say what they wanted to say, and I just let it all slide. But I took my notes, and I know. And it's like, I'm not going to use it in the game, but I know. It's like, okay, girl.
Make sure you're not going to use it.
Yeah, okay. Grace, Nicole has a hit list. She's like Arya Stark.
Yeah, she's going to get him one by one, take him out. Brent, she was hoping that Brent Wolgamott was going to be in the game so she could take him out.
Put him on the list.
Yeah.
Okay.
I like it. I kind of have faith that she's going to embrace the villainhood. And once she does that, I will.
Yeah.
I'll be a fan.
Okay.
For sure.
Yeah.
We get a little bit with Enzo where Kevin says, like, hey, Enzo, will you use the veto on me? He's like, see what Cody says. And then Cody's like, probably not. So, but I'd love to work with you.
Did I miss it? Because I did, like, get up for a second during the episode. But, like, on the feeds, Enzo made a joke about backdooring Tyler. Did they show that tonight?
No, they only showed Ian as the person.
Interesting.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Bailey and Davon. They talk. They're going to work together. They're excited. Your victory is my victory. Black Girl Magic is here.
I love it.
I thought Bailey played that she was so good in that conversation in the sense that I think it's genuine, but just saying, like, you know, whoever one of us wins, it's, you know, I'll be so happy for you. And at the end, she said, this is your season. That's what she said exactly as they were walking out the door. And I just thought that was so great. I don't think it's like she's doing it maliciously or she's trying to play day, but I thought that was really well done, like really good relationship building.
I mean, Swaggy C tweeted earlier this week that they had a conversation beforehand and Bailey and him decided, like, if they are able to get to the end with Davon, like, Davon deserves to win the season hands down. I think that that's a really, really nice sentiment. But a piece of me, the Davon stand in me is also like, I don't want the charity though. Like, I understand the solidarity. Yeah. I get it. I am so down for the Black Girl Magic. Yeah. I mean, listen. But at the same time, I want the win to be like a well-earned, justified win. And we have an entire season to get through. So I'm not making any assumptions. I just wanted to make that point, you know?
Yeah.
Okay.
Plus, like, it's not any fun to like get to the end and then be like, and here you go. I'm going to step aside. It's like, that's kind of like, okay, no, like, let's like finish the game out. Like, that's the whole point now that we're both here, you know?
But Amon, did Swaggy say that, okay, Bailey and I talked about this, and that if she gets to the end with Davon, she will move aside for Davon?
It was Yeah, it was kind of like that. I mean, I don't have the tweet pulled up in front of me, but it was in more or less words. It was like, yeah, like if she's able to make it to the end, then this is going to be her season to take. So,
yeah. And somebody even said like what you just said about like, oh, well, Day wouldn't want the charity. And he was like, yes, like I know Day and you don't. And like, I know she would like want it or something. And I mean, I don't know the exact wording, but I was kind of I don't know. Like, I feel like the viewers, like it wouldn't be satisfying to have like two people get there and it's like, yay, they got there. And then just to have them be like, you take it. No, you take it. Like, it's like, no, like we want to win.
It's really the jury's call, I think.
Exactly. Yeah, and it's like, you're kind of like robbing Bailey of any agency of the game that she has. You know what I mean? Because if she gets to the end with Davon, it's going to be because Bailey also was a good player. So, I mean, are you really sure you want to throw away that win for your wife? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think that scene with the two of them, I think, you know, is another one. We had a lot of like two people coming together. I think it's just so important in this game to find that one person you can ride with. So, you know, Bailey and Devon doing that. Cody and Franzel seem to have that. Enzo feels like he has that with Cody. And then Tyler has it with everyone else in the house.
In a lot of ways, I mean, I'm happy for Devon because in a lot of ways, this is sort of like a redo of what happened with her and Zakiya. Like, we saw this exact same confessional during BB18. She was like, she's a chocolate drop, I'm a chocolate drop, like we gonna ride this thing to the end. And then things with Polly got a little out of hand and it just never really coalesced into anything. But I think that Bailey, I mean, no shade to Zakiya at all, I just feel like Bailey is a little bit more in the game than Zakiya was, so I feel like that's, she's definitely a stronger ally for Day. And that's been one of Day's biggest critiques, is that she does not have any solid ally. So if there is one person in that house that is going to be loyal to the soil with her, I am glad that it is Bailey, and I cannot wait to see what they can do during this season.
Okay. All right. We get then Enzo sneaks up on Nicole and Ian. Also, I thought that Enzo overreacted to walking in on them. I thought Enzo acted like the weirdo more than Ian and Nicole were.
Yeah, I mean, like, people have conversations sometimes, and sometimes when someone else comes in, even if you're not talking game, you're kind of just like, oh, okay, like, hey. But Enzo took it and he ran with it, and he was like, they've got a thing going on. I mean, he's not wrong. They do have a thing going on, but, like, still.
Yeah. It's Enzo. I mean, they weren't expecting to see crazy Enzo, jumping around down the steps. Grace, that happens all the time. I'm not like, I didn't know my kid was right behind me. I jumped three steps backwards.
I mean, it didn't even seem like they were really talking. So Enzo was also saying that they stopped talking, but it, like, you know, Franz will ask Ian, like, you know, do you want to talk? And he goes, no, not really. Like, no, I'm all good. I just want to know how you were doing. I don't really know what Enzo thought he heard or what he didn't hear. I guess he just saw that's where Kevin was doing all his campaigning. So he thought maybe there must be strategy going on in the bathroom in the middle of the night. But I don't know what he heard.
Okay. All right.
I like Enzo being a bit of a wild card that's kind of willing to like throw that kind of stuff out there, because I mean, he is a bit disconnected from the rest of these players, whereas we've heard rumblings of the pre-gaming and some of these pre-made duos and stuff. But Enzo, if there's going to be a player that's going to be willing to like blow that up, like, I'm glad that it's him.
So is it a mistake though to go after Ian, basically say nobody who's won $1 million is winning as long as I'm here, to Cody, who is so close with Franzel?
I would say yes, because I think that as much as Nicole and Cody are together, in the back of Cody's mind, you have to imagine it's the same thing. Like, of course he's going to try and be as loyal to Nicole as possible, but like, you came in second place and she won. Mm-hmm. So that self-preservation has to kick in at some point.
Yeah. Well, that's fair.
Do you think that Cody has a little extra animosity towards Ian, that he brings this up?
Let's not forget that Ian went to the final two against one of the greatest players to play the game and beat him.
Now, is that a little like salt in the wound of like, oh, he went to the final two with a great player and he actually won? Mm-hmm. And people don't have to say all the time, oh, that was stupid Ian. How could he bring Dan to the final two?
Yeah. Everyone's like, ah, well, look at Ian. He beat Dan. And with Cody, they're like, Cody, you're so stupid. Why did you bring Derek? It just doesn't make any sense. Like, when it could have had literally like the same result depending on the jury. So I do think there's a little bit, a little twinge of jealousy there.
Okay. All right. We go to our veto ceremony. Enzo is not going to use the veto. It's too early, yo. Too early. Too early for the veto. All right.
Too early.
Way too early. I mean, it's an easy choice. I mean, one of the nominees wasn't really doing a lot, and the other one is doing just enough to stay. So you don't really feel bad about not using it, even though he was the person that asked you to play for him. So there really is no blood on his hands either way.
Plus, like, if you already feel comfortable with the fact that the person who is saying they want to work with you is going to stay, then there's really no need to get extra blood on your hands. Like, I feel like the only reason you would want to do that is if you thought the person who wants to work with you and the person you're interested in working with was like going to go home and there was no way to save them. And it's like, this is it. But otherwise, just doesn't make sense.
I don't even know what Cody would have done as the replacement nominee because he was flying by the seat of his pants with the whole Janelle and Kacer thing. Like, and then he had to put up Keisha and Kevin. So like, who the hell would have gone up if Kevin would have came down? Probably like Nicole A or maybe even... maybe Ian. I don't know.
Yeah.
Keisha leaves us with some encouraging words about her position in the game.
At this point, my social game is in full effect.
Well, this is full effect?
Full effect.
It's not great.
That's it.
I think she's got to put it in overdrive.
There's got to be something more there.
I really want more. It's just, I don't want to believe all of these tweets and sentiments that people have about Keisha, about, oh, she came for the 40K. Now she's good. She finessed CBS out of 40K. And I'm like, I don't want to believe that, but like, it really feels like that because she hasn't done anything and you're in the DR. Like, that DR seems so scripted because what have you done? Like, I mean, yes, everybody loves you, Keisha, but do they love you because of your BB22 social game or do they love you because of BB10? Mm-hmm. You know, I just, it's just frustrating.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, for Keisha fans out there,
there's no way that I'm going home this week.
Okay. All right. You heard it here first. There's no way Keisha is going home. Okay. Let's take a couple questions and then let's see if we have any live feed news to talk about. We could look ahead to tomorrow's HOH. Okay. Let's go ahead and bring some questions in. Ian Terry fan account says, if Ian can survive these first few weeks and let bigger targets form, do you think he has a really good shot at another deep run in this game? You know, we saw Ian talked about and how that we can't let a winner get far. Grace, how long do you think Ian's got in this game?
I don't think Ian has very far to go in this game. I feel like he's a pre-jury candidate. I mean, he's not doing, like, he's not like this huge target, but I also think he's not super in with many people. He does have Franzel, which I think, you know, if that relationship, if she can kind of vouch for him, then maybe he can keep sort of sliding along. But I don't know if he, where he'll sort of find, you know, in his previous game, he ended up having that alliance that formed that sort of got him to the end. I don't see where that would form, but there's a lot of game left.
I do think his biggest issue is these first few weeks. I mean, obviously the question said like if he survives these first few weeks, but I do think it's going to be really hard to survive these first few weeks just because if everyone keeps playing scared like they have been, then I think that it's going to be very hard for Ian because he's an easy boot. Like, I mean, there's so many reasons why they could kick him out. Like, he's one, he's like not super well connected within the group. It wouldn't really piss everyone off to, like, you know, send him out the door. Number two, he's already won. It's an easy excuse to be like, look, like, I got to put you on the block. You've already won the game, you know, like, it's, you know, like, give someone else a chance, whatever. And so I do think that like these first few weeks are going to be really hard, but if people like start actually kicking it into high gear and playing really hard these next couple weeks and they, you know, have bigger targets emerge, then I think he can kind of float through until he needs to. And then he can like form allies. Hopefully. I think like that's the key. It's like, he needs to form those bonds. He either needs to form them on his own or be brought into something, whatever it may be, but he can't just play on his own or play with Nicole and have that be it.
Okay.
I kind of wish that he was like more into the drama of everybody else. You know what I mean? Because I feel like he could fan those flames, but he's just not about that. He's just going to like stay in the back, because that's something that would distract. You know what I mean? Because I mean, Grace is right. I mean, he does have Nicole. And if people are going to use the rationale of he's already won before to get his ass out of there, Nicole has to be scared and be like, no, let's not do that. Like, because I won too. You know what I mean? So I feel like if he can make it past these first few weeks, I think, as long as he doesn't touch the block in the first few weeks, then he can make the deep run. But if he touches the block, he's going to have to save himself with comps, which he's probably capable of doing, which could make this a whole full circle moment for BB14 and have him be the Frank Udy of the season and like having to win over and over and over again. So we'll
I think
see.
That would be fun, though, to see Ian sort of like back to the wall, Ian, and like having to really like mm-hmm. fight his way out of like being in trouble. I think that would be exciting to see, even though I hope he goes on a deep run in the season. Okay.
Yeah, I sort of doubt Ian a bit there, but the other thing, didn't Ian notoriously have a full game plan of what he wanted to do the first time? He had like written on a piece of paper basically every step of the way. You have to think he did something similar, and that he's not just sort of floating along. This is, I would assume, this is an intentional strategy. That
his R score is incredibly high.
R score.
Okay.
Gotta look at the R score.
Always. All right. Let's take a look at this next question. This is from Sarah, who says, is Janelle connecting with the other players enough? I think there's a good reason Nicole F and Danny aren't being targeted, why Janelle and Kacer are. Do you think that the issue here is that Janelle hasn't connected well enough with the players, Melissa?
I think that's part of it. I mean, and I don't think it's anything that Janelle is necessarily doing. I think that people are just really intimidated by her, and they've said so. I mean, like, she's really intimidating. She's like a Big Brother legend. Like, you know, even Kevin is, you know, talking about the Big Brother legends, but Janelle is one of them. Like, she was on the original All-Stars. She was like, she's been on the Amazing Race. Like, she's Janelle. Like, everybody knows Janelle. Like, and she's also like, even if she wasn't in Big Brother at all, like, she's so like effortlessly cool. Like, I'd probably be intimidated talking to her. So like, I can see why she's kind of having trouble connecting with people, but you know, it's tough. I mean, I hope she can, I hope that this is just like for now, but, and she can kind of like, once the starstruckness kind of wears off, like maybe people will, you know, I don't know.
You think it's because she's literally wearing a star costume?
She's in the star. Yeah. She's got to get
so
rid of that
starstruck.
Costume.
You're such a star.
I mean,
certainly
yeah,
not helping.
She's definitely, I mean, she is a star, and she is intimidating. And I mean, I tend to believe that if I were in the game, I would definitely be like, you know, kissing the hem of her star garment and trying to get in on her good side. But like, if you're afraid, it's to the point now, like especially with Nicole F, like Nicole F knows that Janelle does not like her, and she knows that Janelle is talking crap about her, but she's not going to address Janelle about it because she knows that Janelle would probably wipe the floor with her. So it's just like, it's really, really hard to like for her to make any moves right now, because Nicole is on the side of the house that has a lot of the power, and Janelle just sort of missed the window of opportunity to get people on her side. So
yeah, Janelle and Kacer were totally like pretty much, you know, sort of named as the target, just because I think their name reputation sort of came in and sort of they got painted as these big targets, which I think is fair. And but I think that's also affected sort of how they've been able to relationship build. They've sort of been ostracized. But the other thing too, I always wonder, like, you know, if you're playing with someone like Janelle, part of you maybe wants to play with Janelle, but part of you doesn't want to, you know, the Twitter feed being like, how did you let Janelle, like, how did you let her get so far if you play with her, right? Mm-hmm. So
who's
you're
gonna say that?
Thinking,
the fans like, can say thank you for letting Janelle get so far.
Yeah, but you will kind of want people hopefully to respect your game, which mm-hmm. could be because you're playing with Janelle. But I feel like maybe that's just what I would be feeling, is like, is she playing me? Because I know she's so good. So is this a genuine connection we're making, or is this Janelle is really good at Big Brother?
Okay. All right. Let's do one more question and then let's hit the live feeds. This is from Chandler. It says, what are some other past house guests that would have done well in this competition? If I'm remembering correctly, Cliff was also an expert in riding bananas, you know, before the wife. Okay. All right. Let's not explore some of the best house guests who might have been able to ride the banana. Okay?
Who was the rodeo clown last year? Who is
Whistle
the
Nut?
Clown?
Yeah, you're right.
Christmas would have run right out of that house if Whistle Now walked in there. Okay. All right. Let's how about this one? Christian Country Boy asks, Taryn, has Ian been putting in enough effort to make himself good with Cody, or is Nicole his advocate? Is he doing enough to work on Cody?
I don't really know, Taryn, what do you think? Yeah, where's Taryn? Wait, is he coming? No, I don't really think he necessarily needs to if he is working with Nicole. I think that like Nicole's essentially treating Ian as like, oh, I've got sway with Ian. I can control Ian, whatever, to everybody who will listen to her. So I think that like he doesn't necessarily, and I don't think it really does him any good to make any inroads with Cody since he's already got that Nicole connection. I think he needs to be building up other connections for himself outside of this Nicole Cody sort of thing, because he's kind of already got it in there, and now he needs to get it in somewhere else in order to like use that as his parachute, or use either one as his parachute.
Okay. All right, let's go ahead and switch over to talking about the live feeds. I don't think we have too much to update there, but
I was scared to say, you're making me nervous. I was like, did we miss something?
No, I mean, do we even need to play the spoiler song?
Okay. I don't really think so. I mean, really, it's basically as it is. Nothing's really changed. It seems like, you know, like as the episode basically was leading us to the conclusion, it seems like Kevin's going to stay and Keisha's going to go home. There hasn't really been anything to change that. And I don't think there will be, but you know, you never know before the live show. So,
yeah. Could we take a look at tomorrow's HOH and some of the likelier suspects who might be going for the HOH? Grace, do you have any couple of names that you think could be really trying to gun for this week's HOH?
Well, Janelle and Kacer, I think we'll both gun for it, knowing that they were a target this past week. I think that's pretty obvious. I could see sort of like Cody, like the people who've sort of been attached to Cody, maybe also trying to keep her. So like Enzo maybe going for it as well. Not sure.
Okay.
I think, go ahead.
I was going to say, do you think that Franzel could be trying to go for an HOH here, considering that she feels like Janelle wins, she'll put me on the block because she hates me.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I tweeted earlier this week that if Janelle or Kacer win HOH, that safety suite is going to be overbooked. So I think that she definitely needs to be on the lookout. The fees did go down for about 48 minutes today, and I think people were speculating that it had something to do with tomorrow's HOH. So it might be like a memory questions comp or something like that. So. And if it's one of those situations where they're in separate booths, I mean, I think that makes everybody want to win more because you can't see how else everyone else is doing. So you're like, I got to stay in as long as possible. So if we do get one of those tomorrow, I think even the people that were a little bit less gung-ho to win might actually feel like, okay, you know what? Let me just play it safe. And let's try and, you know, get this win. So yeah, definitely. And I think Christmas is probably another one that's probably wanting to, you know, she wants to play. Like, she broke her foot the last time, she's back, she wants to win a comp. So
Melissa, we'll, it was another purple night for Christmas.
Yep
Yeah, not really. I don't know why they brought her back. That they're not showing her. I really don't get what they thought they were getting.
She doesn't really make for good TV, but I will say that she is doing pretty well in the game so far. I think she's making good connections with people. I think she's, you know, making personal connections with people. Yeah.
Anytime you have somebody who doesn't really make for great TV and that the fans don't care for, you got to bring them back.
Oh, of course.
That's
the first thing.
No brainer.
We need her. We need
bad TV.
Christmas.
Fans don't like them. Get them in there.
Yeah. Oh, that's how you get an all-star season.
Xanax. Oh my God. Give me a whole prescription. I love it.
Yeah. You got to do it anytime. All right. Let's take a couple more of these questions. Let's go back to James, who says, who do you guys think Kevin should have chosen to play in the veto? We touched on that earlier, that Davon's name came up as somebody who could have come up. Was there anybody else?
I mean, I think he should have gone for somebody who he thought would not win, or would at least, or wouldn't even want to try to win. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like there was nobody there that was like a solid, yes, I will use the veto on you if I am picked. If there was, then, you know, maybe, okay, great, pick that person. But like at the point that we were at, there wasn't anyone who was agreeing to use the veto on him. So I think at that point, you choose the weakest person, or you choose someone who definitely wouldn't want to rock the boat, and they will like throw the competition. Like, that's what you need at that point.
Okay.
Yeah. It was such a hard decision to make. You know what I mean? Cause like, I mean, yeah, you're right. Like, he didn't really have a lot of options. And even if there was somebody like a Davon or like a Nicole Anthony, maybe, like, everybody was so gun-shy that the culture of the game during the first week was like, we don't want to show our cards. So it was like, you're running the risk of like having somebody, not choosing somebody that would use it on you, but if you do choose them and they do use it on you, then that's the line. You know what I mean? And nobody wanted to draw the line. So it was just like, what do you do? So.
I was also wondering when Kevin went to Cody and was kind of like saying like, is there anything we can do? He, at least on the show, it didn't show that he sort of had any plan. There was nobody else he was sort of throwing out. And I was wondering, I think you kind of need to do that, or, you know, at least take a shot at that, unless he just thought for sure there's no chance. And I'll just hope that he doesn't use it, but then he'll try to keep me. But he didn't really throw out an alternative plan either. So. Mm-hmm.
Okay. This is a question that's from Mindy on YouTube. Talk about the BB questions they did today, please. Did anybody catch that they went live today to answer questions? It seemed like that they're creating some specific content for the Big Brother Facebook page. Did anybody catch this today?
I watched part of them.
Yeah. What were they doing?
They were asking questions about Big Brother history. I think they were like trying to get a discussion going or something. They were like, this doesn't have any impact on the game, but basically they would ask questions like, you know, about specific house guests of the past, or like who, or like,
it's like an off-season podcast.
Yeah, essentially. Yes. And I think they at one point asked like, which house guests would you have wanted to see here play in All Stars? So that was kind of an interesting one, to see them like try and pick who they would want to. I found some interesting answers for sure, but I think Danny said Eric Stein. So,
oh, they let Eric Stein's name be mentioned on the live feed.
No, it was bleeped out.
Yeah.
We think it was Eric Stein. Yeah, we're pretty assuming. Sure.
Yes.
We don't know.
Yeah,
sure.
There was like a lot of. There was that question. There was what was your favorite twist? And thankfully, a lot of people were like, "Screw the Battle of the Block." Yes. Like, who's the funniest in the DR? And I think that they all had a group consensus and said it was Brittany, with like Davon as a close second.
Yeah, they said like who cried the most. And like some people said Wamber, and some people said Josh. And
okay.
Vanessa.
The most gorgeous, like both female and male, who was like the best looking.
Yeah.
Got a few Codys in there, a lot of Ambers in there.
I feel like it was interesting to hear them talk about past seasons. I really liked that aspect of it, but I kind of wish they had made them like pick someone, like not just like, okay, everyone kind of say an answer and now we'll move on. Like, it kind of would have been interesting to see like an actual like debate, which I think they were trying to get them to do, was kind of like, okay, now let's like figure out who's actually the funniest or whatever. But it was like everyone kind of said something, and then it was like, all right, next question.
It was very like first night of college BB orientation icebreaker type.
Oh, totally. Totally. I mean, it was interesting. I like that they asked about that past house guests, and like people could kind of reminisce and stuff. That was kind of cool. Mm-hmm. But
okay,
didn't really do anything.
All right. Let's take a question from Thomas. Is being a good liar an essential part of winning Big Brother? And if so, on a scale of 1 to 10, how does Cody measure up with his lying ability? Is Cody a good liar?
No.
Okay.
He has a tell. Like, he can't, like, his face is sort of like very, I mean, even when Janelle and Kacer ended up getting safety, you could just read Cody's face. He was just not pleased with it. He's just not someone that kind of holds on to that sort of thing. I don't necessarily know if being a good liar is essential for Big Brother. I think that there are definitely times when you want to hide the truth. Mm-hmm. But I mean, it kind of depends on your cast. You know what I mean? Like, if you get a cast that is all about honesty and loyalty, then no, being a good liar is probably not the best for your cast. But like, if you have a little bit more of a well-rounded cast that doesn't really mind that kind of behavior, then yeah, I would say it just depends on who you're playing with in the situation.
Yeah, I also think like having the skill of like not actually lying, but or like not actually telling. It's like telling the truth, but also lying at the same time. Like you're not actually lying.
Omission. Small.
Yeah,
lie.
It's exactly. It's like,
not a final two. It's not a final two. I just
yeah. It's like I didn't say final two. I just and just having like catchphrases that you use in specific situations that like reassure the person and make you think, make them think you're agreeing with them, but really like you're not really saying anything. Like I feel like if you're gonna go into the house, you need to have like set phrases that you can like pull on that are like okay, like let's do this. Or something like that. Like, let's go. You know, like, I know we all hate let's go, but it's like to have phrases like that where it's like, let's go doesn't really mean anything. Yeah. Like, but like when you
really
say let's go to somebody.
Deniability, Melissa, of that, like, I said to you, we're let's go to the end. You said, let's go. Like, but I didn't say yes. I said, let's go. Look, I didn't say
but
where.
I do think that, like, you could plausibly say, like, I said, let's go. I didn't say like, I didn't never said to you, let's go to the end. Like we're final two together. Like I never said we're final two. I said, like, I just agreed
I
with
said,
you. Like,
let it go.
Yeah. I don't know. Let's go is probably a bad example, but I mean, there's certain phrases that people say, and you can kind of pick them out when you like hear conversations yeah. like that, like don't really say anything, but give the appearance of saying something. So that's something
I don't know. I feel like the last two seasons, if you pair up with someone who lies a lot, then that's how you're going to win. Casey, I mean, not that Tyler lied a lot, but he was the one making all the deals. Casey ends up in the end. She wins. Josh with Paul. I mean, I the lying thing, I feel like it's going to come back to bite you a lot of times in Big Brother because the jury gets together and they're going to talk about what happened. And people are obviously, as soon as they go into the jury house, they're going to talk about everything that happened and all the promises that were made. So lying, I think, can be an important skill, but it depends on the type of lie I think you're trying to tell.
Grace, what would be your go-to non-committal catchphrase?
We got this. We got it.
we got it.
A good one is like, I feel really good about this.
I feel really good about this.
Because like that doesn't say anything. Like if someone's like, we should work together. Like, I feel really good about this. And it's like, you're not saying anything. You're not agreeing to work with them. You're just saying like, you feel good about this, but about what? Like, we don't know. What do you feel good about? This conversation?
What
like
about,
working together? Like,
I don't want to put you in a bad spot, but.
Amon, do you have one? Do you have a non-committal catchphrase?
Oh shit. Yeah. Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
That is good.
Okay. How about, whoa. Like, I'm really impressed.
Yeah, I like it.
Damn.
Yeah, if you just keep saying, like, you and me.
Yeah, that's a good one. It's just like,
you and me.
To ride this thing to the end.
Yeah.
It's like the Paul Rudd meme.
Look at us. Okay. Let's see if we have one more decent question. Tucker says, okay, Tyler's impersonation of Taryn's impersonation of Tyler is perfect at every level. Okay, great. Good to know.
Like, okay.
What was that about?
Do we have a question? Okay. All right, let's see. Thomas says, will Tyler struggle in the long run by having so many deals? I don't think he will go unnoticed floating in the middle like he did in Big Brother 20. Okay, I guess will Tyler ultimately be done in on having too many deals? What do you think, Grace?
I do think he's in a tricky situation. I'm surprised that so many people went to him and sort of did that same thing of trying to, you know, have a final two with him when they know, I mean, I would hope that they all sort of know that that's what his thing was the last time. So unless they're sort of doing it, playing 3D chess to sort of call him out on it later. I'm not sure why they all thought this is the guy I need to make a final two deal with, the guy who made a bunch of final two deals before.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah. Amon, let me listen to this theory. Okay. Paul loses to Nicole in Big Brother 18, comes back, goes to the end, loses again. Do you think that people are like, hey, I'll be the KC to Tyler and I'll sit next to Tyler in the end and I'll win against Tyler this time?
Let's go.
I think that there probably are a few people in there that would have that kind of mentality. I feel like it's a losing mentality because you, like, people forget that, like, yeah, Casey wasn't really involved in a lot of, like, the decision making, but she won a bunch of competitions and kept Tyler safe in order for him to make those deals. So if you're not willing to put up your half of the bargain, then you might as well just sign your own eviction notice, because it's not going to work. I tend to believe that Tyler is probably okay for a while, because a lot of people, when his name comes out of other people's mouths, it's sort of like, oh yeah, I like him. Like, I just want to keep him around, because all of them are like, he is going to sink his own ship. Mm-hmm. I think that he thinks he's going to sink his own ship, and they think he's going to sink his own ship. And really, he's floating. Like, he's going to be fine, because yeah, everybody thinks he's going to do himself in, but really he's just talking to all of y'all, and y'all are keeping him in your back pocket. Well, so you think. So,
Melissa, that really, we saw in Winners at War, so many players came into that game looking for their meat shield. And a lot of people felt like, okay, well, Tony's not bothering anybody. We'll just, you know, I'll hide behind Tony. People will go for Tony. People probably feel like, hey, if I go sit on the block with Tyler, they're definitely voting out Tyler. They're not going to vote out me if I'm up on the block with Tyler. He's a good person to be in a final two with.
Yeah, I mean, that's totally possible. I can see the logic behind it, but I think when you're looking at past seasons as precedent, I think that you have to look at, you can look at past gameplay of individual players and say, like, okay, this person played a really honest game. This person lied the whole time. Like, this person, you know, won a bunch of competitions or whatever you want to look at. But I think that when it comes down to the end, you cannot look at the jury. Like, I don't think you can look at past juries and past jury decisions, because it's like, it's always going to be different. We can never predict it. I know that, like, every final roundtable, we always try and say, like, okay, if this person is going to vote for this person, it never is right. So I think that, like, the jury is always going to do something crazy. So you just have to set yourself up in the best position that you can be at the end of the game. And you can't sit there thinking about the past. It just, you can't.
Okay.
That being said, though, I do think that it's important to note that, like, he has to land somewhere, because I feel like he is kind of hovering over a bunch of final two deals, and he is, like, missing out on some of the alliances that are coming together. So if he doesn't figure that out soon, like, he might find himself on the block more sooner rather than later.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Anything else that we want to say before we look into tomorrow's episode?
Excited to get to the eviction.
Okay.
First eviction.
All right. Look, I'm very excited this week that it is the 1 year anniversary for the Purple Pants podcast. Great job by your baby boy, Bryce Isaiah. 1 year for the Purple Pants podcast. Congratulations to Bryce. Check that out. Highlights from 1 year of the Purple Pants podcast. Over on back in the Survivor world, I talked with Josh Wiggler as the Wiggle Room goes through time about the Dead Grandma episode of Survivor Pearl Islands. Be sure to check that out in our Survivor podcast feed with the B&B also talking about that same episode. Very fun episode of the B&B this week. And then, of course, Why Blank Lost, talking about that same episode, Why Tawana Lost. Over on The Bachelor, Greatest Seasons Ever continues. Check out what Amy and Haley have to say about this latest week of The Bachelor in our wrap-ups feed. And of course, News AF keeps marching along. Got a lot of fun stuff with Danny and Tyson this week over on News AF, catching up on all of the craziest stories of the week. Our first Tuesday night stock watch happened last night, where it was Taryn, Melissa, Brent, and Puya who went through the ratings of everybody. Melissa, how was the first stock watch?
It was good. It was definitely interesting because in the middle of the ratings, we got some new information from the feeds and had to switch around a little bit.
Yeah.
Or at least Taryn did. I stayed strong.
Stayed strong. You know. by the way, for people going back and trying to watch the archive, we've been having an issue with some of our longer videos on our YouTube channel, where only the last 2 hours of some of our live streams are only displaying, and it's taking days for YouTube to process the video. I'm not happy about it, I'll be honest. Spent some time talking with YouTube support today. Told them I was not happy. The good news is that if you head over to our Twitch channel, twitch.tv/RHAP. All those videos are archived there. You could watch the entire videos without issue as we continue to work with YouTube about fixing our long streams.
Yeah, and this was a long one. It was like 3.5 hours. So,
yes.
Thanks.
Of course, tomorrow morning, Taryn will get you ready for eviction day. The Taryn will be live at 11 a.m. Eastern, 8 a.m. Pacific. So be sure to catch the live feed update to hear what happened in the Big Brother house today. Of course, we will be back then live on Thursday night for our recap of eviction night number one. So excited to see what happens. We'll have a new HOH and a lot to break down tomorrow night at 9:15 p.m. Eastern time. So be on the lookout for that. And of course, all of this podcasting that we do. I believe this week, I think that we have, we're trying to count, I'm not sure if it's 14 or 15 different Big Brother podcasts that are going to be going up for week one.
Crazy.
Wow.
That's wild.
The prolificness of it all.
Made possible by the patrons of Rob Has a Podcast. Of course, you can get access to our patron-only podcast feed, our patron community on Facebook and Discord, and more when you head on over to robhasawebsite.com/patron. Or if you want to support the show without spending a dime, head on over to ratethispodcast.com/RHAP and leave us some feedback in the Apple Podcast Store. All right. Lots of fun here tonight to go through everything. Grace, great job on your first recap here with us.
Thanks for having me. It's so much fun. This is it's so exciting. You know, Big Brother All-Stars is exciting, but it's fun to also get to come on and talk about the episode with this All-Star panel.
Yeah, oh, thank you. Grace, do you have a favorite player?
I mean, Kacer probably is my favorite. I really like Ian as well. So those are probably the two people I'm rooting for.
All right. Grace, where can people find you on social media?
Yeah, pretty much just Twitter. My Twitter handle is Hi From Grace. That's Twitter.
Great Twitter handle. How about that?
Great.
Yes. Okay. Aman, where can people keep up with what you're doing?
You can find me at Aman Adwin on Twitter, as per usual. Also, you can find me on the RuPaul's Drag Race podcast. We are in the middle of coverage for the first inaugural season of Canada's Drag Race. So,
how's that going?
It's great. Canada is the queens over there. The northern queens are ready to make their mark on the world. So it's been a lot of time. It's been a good time this past season.
Okay.
How about judgy judges though?
Judgy ass judges. That's for sure.
Yeah.
And how about the choir room?
Oh yes, I also have the choir room podcast. If you are a Gleek. Me and Matt Liguori are going through a rewatch of the entire series of Glee. We just posted the rest of season 4. So if you are a fan of Glee, come check us out. If you're not a fan of Glee, come watch Glee and just listen to the podcast. Like, it's a lot of fun. So,
okay. And the great Melissa Denny. Melissa, when are you going to start your own podcast?
Not until at least Big Brother is over for the season.
Yeah.
All right.
Takes up all my time.
Yes. Okay. Melissa is on Twitter. She's at It's Melissa. 3 A's for our new viewers.
Yeah. 3 A's on the end of that. And that's for all social channels.
Yes. Okay. Mm-hmm. 3 A's for It's Melissa. Okay. All right. And of course, I'm at Rob Sisterino. We will be back with our live show tomorrow night. So looking forward to seeing how the HOH turns out. Take care, everybody. Thanks for watching. Have a good one. Bye.